prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to this special episode of Come At Me, Bro. We're going to be joined by Ben Greenfield here shortly, I hope. We had hoped to have him on already. I've been trying to text with him this morning to find out what's going on, just in case there's been a change in time, or maybe he got confused on the actual time because he's on the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast. So we'll be patient and wait here for him. We're going to talk about his new book, Beyond Training. It's not a new book. It's actually the new revised version of it. He's added a lot of stuff to it, and it really is a good book. I would actually think that it could have been easily called the Human Performance Bible, because it really is quite an in-depth work, and hopefully we'll get to talk about that here shortly with him. Those of you who are watching live, feel free to ask questions, and we will answer those questions as best as we can as we try to wait here for as long as we can for Ben to come on. Anyway, I got to share something with you that's really been interesting. So, and this is kind of a public service announcement. So a Thursday, I think it was Thursday or Wednesday, maybe it was Wednesday. Wednesday, we shared on Facebook the phone number of the IRS scammers that were calling, at least into my city. And I asked people to call them and prank phone call them. And I even said, record your phone calls, because I did this. I recorded my phone calls and I put them up on Facebook. Some of them I didn't put up yet because I would have to edit all the curses out, both mine and theirs. But nonetheless, what happened was a lot of you did, in fact, pick up the torch and call those numbers. And we even had Will Bergen from Texas on the show on Thursday because his prank phone call was so funny. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But here's what we ended up doing inadvertently without realizing it. So these scammers call every single year, and the people they prey upon mostly are the elderly, the unwitting. They get nervous. This is the IRS. You owe us $7,000. We're going to seize your assets and kick you out of your house. And they panic, and then they go, oh, what can I do? And they say, well, you have to pay now. And they won't take a credit card because they know you can actually reverse the credit card charge it back. And so what they do is they ask for your bank account information. They suck the money out of your bank account. The IRS actually never seizes anything. So the people unwittingly think, oh, it worked. I paid the $7,000 and now I don't have to worry about this. When in fact, it wasn't the IRS at all that called them. Well, we know it's not the IRS, those of us who are young, because the IRS doesn't call you to collect money. They use the old-fashioned snail mail. And they know your Social Security number, and they got all your information. So what these scammers are doing is leaving messages on people's answering machines and saying, call me back. This is agent so-and-so. You know, you owe us money, blah, blah, blah. And people call back, and they, many of them, in fact, what we learned from one of the scammers, because I got to talk to several of the scammers, as did my friend Brian. What we discovered from them was, on average, one of these reps collects about $40,000 in fraudulent money a week and earns $1,500 for collecting that money. And you times this by the number of callers in a boiler room and the number of boiler rooms that are doing this, because this isn't just one organization. This has become a typical scam that is preyed on the United States. And they're doing this from the Philippines, from China. They're doing it from all over. Now, naturally, because of the way telephony works today and technology, they can assign a phone number. So when you call back, it actually gets forwarded to China or to the Philippines or wherever they are. And so they depend on that phone number for you, because most people, they don't reach first call. Most people will leave a message and those people call them back. Well, through our efforts of pranking them over and over again, they had to change that phone number that they were using. because I started getting messages later in the day from people saying, hey, the number's not working anymore. It just says, you know, the number you've called is disconnected. And so what that means is that our efforts to pranking these callers made them change their phone number. Now, think about this. That means that all the people who got messages that called got a disconnected number. So they had no way to prank. They had no way to defraud those people. They had no way to get money from them. And so it dawned on me, as a nation, we could stop this IRS scam simply by pranking these people when they call and putting it up on Facebook and asking all your friends to prank them. And here's the key thing. You can't just call them and say F you and hang up. That does nothing. You got to let them go through their whole spiel with you. And you're going to have to be on the phone for about 3 to 4 minutes. You have to let them go through their whole spiel with you. And they go through their whole spiel with you. And then at the end of it, then you let them know that they're not the IRS. And then you can say whatever you want. Curse at them. Say you're a piece of crap. You're going to go to hell. You're a horrible person. Whatever it is. But once they invest all that time in reading their spiel to you, and then you tell them F off, and then you call back and do it again to another rep and another rep and another rep, and then you post it on Facebook and social media, and all your friends are doing this, they become inundated with calls that waste their time. And then at some point in time, the room manager goes, we have to change the phone number because we're getting literally hundreds of prank phone calls. We're not able to scam people now. They change the phone number. And obviously, they can start their scam again. But that phone number that was left on answering machines and voicemails for the past X amount of days, when people call back, there's nobody there. So they don't get scammed. So think about how this could work. We don't need the FBI to find these agencies. What we need to do as a population is that when we get these calls, let everybody in your social media circle know that this is the number they called from. And everybody just start calling them and wasting their time. And that in and of itself will put a huge dent in their ability to scam people out of $40,000 an average a week and make their money, and they're going to have to find something else to do. This is brilliant, and quite frankly, it's a lot of fun, because when they go through their whole spiel and then you go to them, I know you're not with the IRS. You're some jerk in some phone room somewhere. You're not going to scam me, and you hang up, and then you call back and you get another rep and you do it again. It totally demotivates them. It humiliates them. It takes the wind out of their sails. And as a result of that, it really does have a beneficial effect. And you're saving a lot of elderly people the embarrassment and the financial loss of being caught up in this. So, you know, it is something that we can do as a population while we wait for the FBI to figure out how to stop them. Which, you know, that's a joke. I mean, you'd think that with all the technology that the FBI has, Echelon and all this data collection, all this sort of stuff, that they can't pinpoint where these rooms are and put pressure on those governments to do something about it is laughable to me. But that's okay. We as a population can solve this problem by wasting their time. And in fact, this was so successful that I'm actually appearing on WHAS 840 AM tonight at 6:35 to share this story, because the more people that hear this and the more people that do this, we can actually get these idiots to stop. If it becomes unproductive, if they can't get the money, if they have to keep changing their phone numbers and they lose that connection to the person that they left a message for, they have to, it just wastes their time. It's not as profitable as it is right now, and they will eventually have to give up. So it is something worthwhile to consider. While we're still waiting for Ben Greenfield, I don't know what happened to him, but let's go ahead and answer a question. Kirkland Warletti says, super dosing of AMPK activators while fasting to get greater mTOR response when the fast is broken. Also, my research is showing citrulline or any of the aminos of compound reducing the refractory period between protein synthesis. Thanks for doing the show. You and Ben are two that I listen to each week, and unfortunately, Ben's not here. And I'll give Ben a chance to answer this as well. Part of the benefit, quite frankly, of fasting is the downregulation of mTOR. We know that two things happen when you fast that are critical to protein synthesis. Number one, autophagy goes up. I did a show about this last year, that it's actually basal autophagy levels that predict the protein synthetic response from consuming protein after a workout. So in other words, autophagy and mTOR flip. Autophagy rises, mTOR drops. And that in and of itself actually causes a greater protein synthetic response from the meal that you have after that. Citrulline, malate, and other amino acids that reduce the refractory period. I don't know that you want to reduce it, quite frankly, Kirkland. I think this is one of those things where if you try to cause mTOR to come up too fast, too often, or too soon, you're going to actually lose the sensitivity of the muscles to build new fiber. And so it's one of those things where I don't think manipulating it actually will get you greater gains. In fact, I think manipulating it will hinder gains. And we'll let Ben take a crack at that when he gets here. I'm going to check the phone and see if he's texted me back. No, not yet. So anyway, we will continue to hold for him and see what else we can talk about in the meantime. I have a really great question from a guy named Ivo Su. I know Ivo. I've spoken to him. He is a world traveler, and he is has an amazing physique, and he's very, very serious about his training. He asked me this question. He asked Ben this question as well. I've experimented with oxytocin. You know, we started talking about oxytocin about 4 years ago on the show when one of the first rat studies were done that showed that raising oxytocin levels in elderly rodents make their muscles respond and recover fast or as fast or faster than young rodents. And so I started to experiment with oxytocin, and I still do from time to time, not as much. I'm using some other peptides right now. And actually, this conversation is going to make me start using my oxytocin again. But nonetheless, Ivo says he had a 23andMe genetic test, and it revealed that he has a silent G to A exchange changes in the oxytocin receptor. I guess 23andMe gives an example of this. Do you have a lack of empathy? You have an SNP in your oxytocin receptor, which may make you less empathetic than most people. And so he said, before I did this test, I realized that I would sometimes think about people. If this person dropped dead in front of me, I wouldn't really care one bit. Not that I'm angry in any way, but in an apathetic way. When people cry in front of me, it actually removes my ability to cry. It inhibits my ability to cry. And I've noticed the following trend over the past 7 years of training. After about 3 to 4 months of training, I fall into a mild depression, mood swings, almost crying in the gym just from hearing a touching song, sleep drops to about 6 hours a night instead of 8, etc. During this time, I always fall in love and end up in a relationship. And this guy is very, this is an example of somebody who has amazing self-awareness in connecting dots, right? Most of us go through life and we don't even connect these dots, but this is great. He says, although I wouldn't call my training excessive 3 to 4 times a week, I stopped training thinking that I'm overtrained as a result of this. After 2 to 3 months of not training, I bounce back to my usual apathetic self. And the relationship generally ends from one day to the other, with me usually feeling relieved about my newfound freedom. The girl in question never did anything wrong. I just prefer being by myself. Could exercise-induced dopamine increases and or physical exercise have a negative effect on my oxytocin levels? Should I have these tested, and what levels should they be? Should I supplement with it? I'd really love to get out of these depressive loops. So there's a lot to this question. There's a lot to understand. And also there's a lack of understanding about the intricacies of oxytocin. For decades, we've just thought that oxytocin was the love hormone, the hormone that makes us feel connected to others, and it does. But as we see from rat model studies, it also plays a role in healing the body. I think of oxytocin the way I think of BPC-157. It actually can repair and heal the body. I think that this is why people who have sex more frequently, who have orgasms more frequently, tend to be healthier, look younger, and quite frankly, live longer. This is part of our genetic imprint. This is part, you know, 'cause remember, our only job on this planet is to have offspring. And after that, we can die whenever we want. So the reality is that oxytocin is something that rewards you when you do your job. When you do your job and you procreate, you have an orgasm. When you orgasm, you're rewarded with oxytocin. When you're rewarded with oxytocin, your whole body goes, ah, we're living up to our potential. So if we think of oxytocin this way for a moment, I believe that exercise probably stimulates oxytocin production. I don't think it's just dopamine here, Ivo. It could actually be, quite frankly, that you are getting oxytocin production when you exercise. And this is why you lose your empathetic trend, and you start to become more sympathetic to other people, and you start to be connected to other people. I would have to ask you this question without you being able to answer, because you said you wouldn't be able to listen live. And that is, when you do you orgasm easily? And are orgasms very satisfying to you? Or do they feel amazing? Or is an orgasm to you just something that really, it's no big deal, you know, that's it? Because the answer to that question may reveal more about your oxytocin levels when you're not training. When you're training and you have these senses of being more empathetic, more sympathetic, are your orgasms more enjoyable and more fulfilling? And the opposite would be true too. When you take off and you become more apathetic, are your orgasms less fulfilling and less enjoyable? Because I suspect that you actually are producing more oxytocin when you train, and oxytocin makes it easier to bond to other people. I don't think, while dopamine does rise, and dopamine makes you feel excited and happy, it's the oxytocin that is causing you to bond with the women and be connected that way. And so there's a lot going on here, and we don't have the research to substantiate anything. All we can apply is critical thinking here. And I would need some answers to those questions about orgasm, when training, when not training. And that could help a lot. Now, as far as becoming emotional, there are periods in my life where I definitely am more emotional. And I've experienced this. I actually have started crying while training one day, had to pull my hoodie over my face because I didn't want people to see my eyes all watery and think, what's wrong with this guy? Usually they're love songs, quite frankly, and I think of Elisa. So those sensations of powerful love come into play for me. And so I've experienced that. I really think training is increasing oxytocin in your case more than anything else. So you have to ask yourself a question. Do you want to stay bonded to people? Keep training. Don't take off. It's not overtraining. In fact, some of the most profound effects of overtraining, which are covered in Ben's book as well, when he talks about recovery, loss of appetite, and one that he doesn't have in there, but loss of libido. If you're overtrained, you are not getting erections easily. If you're overtrained, you're not waking up in the morning aroused. If you're overtrained, you don't really want to have sex. That is probably one of the greatest indicators. I come back to sex, not because I want to talk about sex, but we as a population in the United States, because of our puritanical beginnings, ignore the role of sex and orgasm in the effects on disease states and health and happiness. And quite frankly, this is becoming elucidated more and more in the literature. And unfortunately, because here in the United States, it's hard to talk about this because people get, oh, I don't want to talk about sex. I don't want to talk about orgasm. You know, this is taboo. My religion doesn't allow it. We need to become more open about this discussion because I'm telling you right now, there is, and I'll give you another example real quick. So I'm actually traveling next week to the Human Potential Summit at Quest Nutrition, in California. Some of the greatest minds are coming together to share ideas, to see where they intersect so that we can take human potential and human performance to the next level. As a result of that, I'm actually going to be talking about the melanocortin system. Melanocortin system is a photosynthetic response to exposure to the sun. We attribute only vitamin D production to the effects of what happens when we are in the sun. The reality is that many of the studies that look at vitamin D and then use supplementation, oral or injectable, we don't see the same results as being in the sun. And the reason for that may well be the lack of stimulation of the melanocortin system. The melanocortin system is stimulated by the same things that make you tan. We now know that system can actually reduce plaque buildup in arteries. Literally, take plaque, break it down, and reabsorb it and make it go away. Think about that. People who get regular suntans probably don't have the plaque buildup in their arteries that people who stay out of the sun. And we are so sun phobic today, thanks to the dermatological industry. Oh, stay out of the sun and put on sunblock. This is nonsense. We're like plants. We need sun. But guess what one of the roles of the melanocortin system is? It stimulates libido. Because remember, those who've experimented with melanotan 2 know that it's an aphrodisiac. You get tan from it, and it also stimulates your libido. So this ties back into the whole libido discussion here. I believe that we are ignoring things that affect libido as indicators of health and longevity. We have another question in a second. Ben is, I'm on two other calls until then. I have us down for 10. So he has us down for 10, Pacific. I don't know. We got our times mixed up, I guess. There's nothing I can do about it. Ben's probably not going to make the show. But anyway, the book is fantastic. It's really a good book. Everybody should read it. And it's a New York Times bestseller, and he's revised it. So anyway, Clay Tisdale, who lives out on the West Coast, says, Carl, can you explain BPC 157 and how it works? I am thinking about trying it. Have you tried it? Yes, I use it every day. It's that important, Clay. BPC 157, BPC stands for Body Protection Complex. And what Body Protection Complex is, BPC is it's a fairly short amino acid that does a myriad of things. First of all, from all the literature, it literally has the ability to heal all the tissue in your body, from bone to every organ and so on. It does this by several different pathways, one of which is it increases the growth hormone receptors on cells, which means that if you're using it in conjunction with a growth hormone secretagogue, like growth hormone releasing hormone 6, GHRP6, or modified growth factor 1 through 29, and those should be used together, and I'll discuss that in a second, then you are going to see greater results from it. It's the reason why I'm healing so fast. I'm already walking on my foot in this boot, and I was told that I would have to stay off it for 6 to 8 weeks. And this is my third week, and I'm already walking on it. That is a direct result of the healing effect of these peptides. BPC 157 has been shown to have benefits to healing heart tissue after ischemic events. It's been shown to heal bone. It's been shown to heal ligaments. It's been shown to heal everything in the body when it gets damaged. And if you use it daily, it will heal you as you go along. So you don't have to actually suffer the damaging effects of aging. I'm a huge believer in it. It must be injected. It does work orally for the gut, too. Adele Moussa did a great blog post, if you go to subversity.com, about BPC 157 orally. It's a very delicate peptide. It has very weak bonds. I doubt that it would survive in a patch form, quite frankly, or even a transdermal, just because those bonds are so weak, and that's part of the nature of BPC 157. The only place I would trust to get it is a website called peptidesciences.com. If you tell them you heard about them on the show, you can ask them for a first-time buyer's discount. But don't tell them you're going to use it, because they're not allowed to sell it to you if you say, hey, I'm thinking of using it. Just buy it and reach out to somebody who knows how to use it and get direction from them. But it's a great, great product, and everybody should be using it. Everybody. But use it in conjunction with modified growth factor 1 through 29 and GHRP6. The proper dose for men is 100 micrograms of GHRP6 and 100 micrograms of modified growth factor 1 through 29. That's plenty for a man. That'll stimulate a really high pulse of growth hormone without making you hungry or woozy. If you feel woozy or hungry, you're using too much. That's spillover. The saturation dose for men is 100 micrograms of each. The saturation dose for women is 50 micrograms each. If you stay within that realm, the vial will last you 50 days if you just take one injection a day of each, or 25, a full month if you do two. I recommend two. First thing in the morning on an empty stomach when you wake up, and then once again in the late afternoon, but at least 2 hours after your last meal and a half hour before you have another meal. And that will give you the maximum development of growth hormone. If you use that in conjunction with the BPC 157, you'll see amazing results, amazing results. I got a text message from hey, let me just see something here. So I guess Ben has it wrong. 10, 11. I see what the problem is. Okay. I'm just going to speak it. I see what the problem is. It was noon Eastern that I was messaging with Marge. That's okay. I'm promoting the book, and it's all good. He's on two other calls. So we got our times mixed up. But it's a fantastic book, and I'll go back to it in a minute. Tim Bruce says, you're reading my mind. I was going to fire questions about vitamin D3 deficiencies and how can we boost our levels the most efficient way possible. Also, sunblock dangerous. Yes, it is dangerous. Look, part of our evolutionary journey has been because of the sun. I mean, it's like, Can you grow a plant in the dark? Probably. What will it look like? It'll look weak. It'll be faded. It'll look horrible. Will it live? Yeah, it'll probably live. But will it thrive? Absolutely not. Humans are the same exact way. We need sun exposure. We need it. And I'm going to tell you why skin cancer is prevalent today. And it's not because of the sun. It's because of leaky gut. People are going to go, oh, Carl, how can that cause skin cancer? Okay. So many of us know that if you eat carotenoids like beta carotene, what's the other one that Rob Regish likes so much? That's one of the xanthines. But anyway, Rob loves, there's certain ones that he takes for tanning. If anybody remembers what they are, they come from seaweed, believe it or not. They come from the sea. But beta carotene, as an example, beta carotene has the ability to protect skin from sun damage. Why? You eat a carrot. How does it protect skin from sun damage? The beta carotene actually gets into the cells of your skin. That's where it goes. That's how it protects. It's a powerful antioxidant. Well, when you have leaky gut, the same things that are causing joint pain, rheumatoid arthritis, Hashimoto's disease, these same autoimmune deficiency issues of these rogue metabolites that should be digested and excreted are actually getting into the bloodstream. They are being deposited in your skin too. People say, oh, you know, I don't know why my skin's always so red. You know, I have rosacea on my face. That's because stuff is escaping from your gut and getting into your skin. Well, when you lay in the sun with those things in your cell, the opposite of beta carotene happens. Those things burn and become carcinogenic in the cell because you're cooking these things that shouldn't be in your skin to begin with, and they are poisoning the cells. So the reality of of skin cancer isn't sun exposure. Because if it was, people who live by the equator would have very, very high levels of skin cancer. They don't. People who live in sub-Saharan Africa don't have skin cancer to the rate we have. In fact, blacks who live in sub-Saharan Africa don't have the level of skin cancer that blacks that live in the United States have. And this is why. Because it's not the sun. It's the stuff that's getting deposited in your cells that then being transmuted by the sun's energy into powerful carcinogens and bad actors. And that's where skin cancer comes from. Now, we know that's it. Canthaxanthin and astaxanthin. Thank you, Kirkland Warletti. Thank you. And so we know that a lot of the research we see on vitamin D3 doesn't play out. We know that people who live in sunny climates don't get the plaque buildup. So then we do studies where we give people high doses of vitamin D3. And guess what? They still get plaque buildup. And we go, oh, gee, I wonder why. It's not the vitamin D3. It's the sunlight. It's the sunlight. And that is directly occurring because of something called the melanocortin system, which is very sophisticated and very important. And if you're not getting out in the sun and you're not activating the melanocortin system, then you are going to have all of the maladies of people who of our modern society. And we already know that the using sunblock reduces vitamin D production in the skin. And so it's the same thing as living in the dark. It's going to also reduce your ability to tan, which means that it also attenuates the response of the melanocortin system. Sunblocks are not good. And let's not forget that you absorb these chemicals, and we have no idea what they're doing to us once they get into our skin and into our body. So absolutely, Tim Bruce, I think that it's a total mistake, the message today being propagated that the sun is damaging and evil. In fact, it's the deficiency of the sun that's probably causing a lot of the problems that we have in today's society. So Ben isn't going to be able to be on because I guess he thought, yes, he can hop on yes. Let's do that. I'm sorry I'm doing this while the show. I'll be here waiting. Just log on. Okay, so he's going to be on in a little while. Anybody else got a question that I can answer in the meantime? Please post it. It looks like we have 6 listeners live right now, which isn't very many, but I'm hoping to have Ben on shortly, and I'm sure that people will want to talk to him a lot more than they want to talk to me. Let's see what I have here in my bag of tricks. Let's see here. Arnold Schwarzenegger, breaking news. Tim, can you post what this is that you just messaged me about Arnold Schwarzenegger so I don't have to open it up and read it live? It would be really helpful. But anyway, let's talk about Ben's book. This is an amazing book. I started reading it when he sent it to me last month, and I got to tell you something. This is a seminal work. This book could have easily been called The Human Performance Bible. It's not just about being an Ironman competitor or being a cyclist or being an endurance athlete or being a strength athlete. It's actually it actually discusses ways to be the most efficient form of human being as you can. I don't know how long it took him to write this book, but this is not one of those, I just called it in and wrote as many words as I can. I mean, every single page is filled with actionable steps that will improve your performance in every area of your life. You can get the book at Amazon.com. When Ben comes on, I'll ask him to tell me more. So you posted the link. I can't click the link. Can you just give me the summary of the story? Okay, let me click it. Hold on a second. Just bear with me for a second here. It's about Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm afraid to read it. Emergency heart surgery. Oh, man, that's sad. Don't forget now, Arnold had a pig valve put in many, many years ago. We've forgotten about that because he's lived such a virtually regular life. But I want to say it was back in the 90s that Arnold had a pig valve put in because he had a problem with a heart valve. You know, when we see these people, and I say these people, people who position themselves within the fitness and health community get sick, we have to look at the real reasons. There's a guy doing a commercial right now who I guess he's some sort of celebrity fitness trainer who had a heart attack, and he's actually hawking a new heart attack medication now. And he talks about, like a guy like that, I would go, wait a minute. So let me get this straight. You've been advising people how to be healthy, how to eat right. You know, he's making green smoothies in the commercial. He's like the typical, I would almost imagine he's probably more vegan, or he's one of these plant-based diet guys. Meat is bad, you know, all that sort of stuff. But the reality is when somebody like that gets sick, I say to myself, so let me get this straight. You've been advising people how to be healthy, how to exercise, how to eat, and you just had a heart attack. So really what that does is it wipes out everything that you told people to do, and it really does. It really, really does. I mean, just look at what we were just talking about, how sun exposure can actually rid your body of plaque buildup, right? This guy probably uses sunscreen. Oh, don't go out in the sun too much. It's not good for you. He looked pretty pale and pasty on the commercial. I don't mean to be mean. I'm being honest. You look at Arnold, it's a different story. Arnold had a congenital heart defect that showed up late in life. And as a result, he had a valve replacement when all they had was pig valves, I believe. I don't think he had one of these new robotic valves put in. I would imagine that that valve has probably started to fail. And as a result of that, and who knows, he's probably, I never thought about this, but Arnold's probably been on anti-rejection medication ever since then, which really is amazing if you think about it, that he's done so well, even on anti-rejection medication. And that obviously has a lot to do with his physical culture lifestyle. But I take less fault with somebody like Arnold, who's already had a surgery and he's probably going in to have that replaced or repaired, than a guy who says, hey, you know, I'm a fitness guy. I've been teaching people about fitness. And then I had a heart attack. I got an issue with that. And I'll tell you why. I hold myself to that standard, because if I die prematurely of a heart attack, then pretty much everything I've been telling people is a lie. I really do believe that my greatest example of whether or not I'm getting it right is myself. And, you know, I joke about it all the time with people who know me. It's like, oh, my God, if I die early, then everything I've said is probably incorrect. All the paths I've gone down and that I've proselytized, they're probably wrong, because otherwise I should live. I should live into my 90s. I should be active into my 90s if I get it right. Yeah, so it's Bob Harper. Oh, look at this. Big vegan fan and long-term low-fat, high-carb advocate. Most of his career was pushing cardio over weight, then switching over to CrossFit in the last 3 to 4 years. So this is an example, okay? This guy, by his own example, he got it wrong. Otherwise, he doesn't have a heart attack. He looks like he's maybe in his 40s, maybe. For crying out loud, I'm going to be in my 60s and I'm still chugging along. I mean, I'm chugging along like guys half my age, recovering from surgeries faster. I mean, this is an example of if you're getting it right. That guy, Bob Harper, is an example of if you got it wrong. Yes, I just communicated with Paul Becker a couple nights ago. We are going to have the new device, the new eSTEM device, in our hands probably next week. And I'll know more about it after I get to experiment with it. Paul Becker is brilliant. Paul Becker led the charge in the pulsed electromagnetic field category before anybody was doing it, because his dad had Parkinson's disease and he handmade his first PMF device and actually had a positive effect on his father's disease progression. Paul suffered a stroke recently, but it was a stroke that there was an anomaly in his brain that he's had since he was a child, and it finally gave up. He's doing really well. He's coming back strong. And again, this is a guy who's been a lifelong physical culturist. He trains every single day. He's the true example of a hunter-gatherer. I mean, he lives in some remote areas, and he does some crazy stuff, and he stays in shape. He had this stroke. Most people would have been, that's it, game over, punch the clock. But no, he bounced back, and he's doing great. He doesn't want to come on the show right now because he's still recovering. I remember when he couldn't type, and now he's typing again. And he's my age. I think he's either 60 or a couple years older than me, I think. But yes, I will have the new E-Stim unit in my hands. So he told me that this is nothing like any other E-Stim unit out there. And in fact, he's worried that it's going to be lumped into the same category of some of these other gadgets. So he's sending me one, and I will experiment with it, and I'll have lots to talk about. And I'm sure that we will have a coupon code from him to help cut the price, because it's fairly expensive, like all of his equipment is. Look, I sleep with my Earth Pulse unit every single night. I've been doing this for over a decade now, right? Like 15 years. I actually have the two magnet unit. I moved one of the magnets down to underneath where my feet are. I am sure that that magnet is part of the reason why I'm healing so fast. Between that, peptides, and the fact that I've stayed active, and my anti-inflammatory diet, I know. In fact, I have been invited. I didn't want to say anything because I'm not sure it's going to happen. So next week, I'm going to Quest to be part of the Human Potential Summit. I will be talking about the melanocortin system and its contribution to health. The following week, I've been invited to A4M to speak about how fast this foot is healing. Yes. And I'm going to talk about peptides, and I'm going to talk about the magnet. I'm going to talk about activity. I'm going to talk about diet. But yes, I am convinced that having that magnet 8 hours a night pulsing beneath my foot is the reason why I am walking on this foot already instead of waiting 6 to 8 weeks. So it's our lifestyle. There's no doubt about it. It's our lifestyle. Let's see what time it is. We'll have we're probably going to have Ben Greenfield. He says he's on. I don't see him. Oh, here he comes. Here he comes. Here he comes. Here he comes. Come on, Ben. There he is. Let's connect him to the broadcast and open up his microphone. Ben, how you doing, man?
Hey, good, man. I was on my phone. I was wandering around the kitchen getting breakfast ready, and I'm like, why can't he see me? Why is he inviting me on? I realized I got to log on my desktop.
Hey, no worries. I've been praising the book, and now that you're here, I can kiss your ass a little bit. So,
there you go.
I got to tell you something. This book has the wrong name. It should be the Human Performance Bible, okay? But no, really, I got to tell you something. The level of effort that went into this book, let me get it on the camera too. It's also on the screen in one of the images. The level of this is, in my humble opinion, this is a seminal work in the exploration of human performance and human potential. Okay, you didn't just call it in on this book. Every single book, every single page has valuable information that if you bought this book and you just got one tip out of it that improved your life, improved your performance, it's worth it. And there's like, it's chock full of great stuff. It's just amazing, man. How long did it take you to write this book?
The same way I work on all my books. It's like you wake up in the morning and you write for 20 to 30 minutes. And that one was like a year and a half of doing that. But I don't know if you read any Hugh Howey. He's a great fiction author. He wrote the Silo series. And I listened to an interview with him, and I was pleased to know that he writes like I write. I thought I was the only guy that did this. I'll pull up my laptop, you know, at a dinner and churn out a paragraph during dinner, you know, on an airplane, try and get a few hundred more words in. These writers that have like their sanctuary that they go write in.
You know why that is, Ben? So you write when the information enters your head, as opposed to forcing yourself to write because I got to write for 4 hours today.
Yeah, that, and I'm also just busy as hell. And so somebody's asked me this yesterday, they're like, why? Because I'm working on another book right now. You know, it's kind of, it takes that book that you just held up, Beyond Training, and delves more into longevity and happiness and spiritual health. A lot of the things that they talk about in that book that really I think are the key to truly being happy as a human. But they said, why don't you just lock yourself away and finish this book? Because I was saying, you know, I do a little bit every day. It's because I'm racing and I'm running the company. I like to do a lot of things at the same time. Because of that, it takes me a painfully long time to write a book.
So let's give people a couple tidbits real quick. So what are the two ways to build fitness fast without destroying your body?
Oh, well, I mean, that refers to mitochondrial density. I mean, you have your PPAR pathway and your AMPK pathway. The pathway that a lot of like elite endurance athletes use, or a lot of folks will use to build a lot of stamina, is the 80-20, what's called a polarized approach, a very large amount of time spent in the aerobic, what would be like the Phil Maffetone heart rate zone, very easy conversational effort, the way that Mark Allen, you know, the Ironman champion, Phil used to have him walk up hills in his training instead of run up them. And then there's a very small icing on the cake, about 20% of the rest of the time spent at a very high intensity interval training scenario with very little time spent in like what we would call a lactic acid zone,
right,
or gray zone,
right,
training. You're depleting muscle glycogen, but you're not inducing much of a mitochondrial response or an oxygen utilization response when it comes to something like VO2 max or mitochondrial density. Now, the other way to achieve mitochondrial density and endurance, it hurts more, but it also works, and that would be high intensity interval training.
Right.
That was the way I trained for Ironman for 10 years, was I didn't have the time to do this 80-20 approach, although the 80-20 approach is better for, let's say, for example, reduction of injury risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wants to use more of the high-intensity interval approach, they have to pay closer attention to biomechanics, to keeping injuries at bay, because you're training very hard. But at the same time, you get not better results, but you get the same results and with less training time. It's just a lot more time spent in the pain cave.
Sure, sure. We actually had a question. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, but I do want you to weigh in on it if you did, from a listener who isn't watching live. Did you see that question about oxytocin by any chance?
Yeah, was it on the chat?
Oh, no, I just emailed it. Okay, I just read the question to you. Just give me 1 second. I'll put you. Okay. Well, I'll kill the phone first. I had communication with him. He's been a long-time listener of the show. He's a world traveler. The guy's in amazing condition. Hold on a second. Let me just try to open up. But anyway, he had a question about oxytocin. Apparently, you and I've experimented with and continue to use oxytocin with some regularity.
Nasally injection.
Originally, about 4 years ago, there was a study that was done on rodents that showed that by giving older rodents oxytocin, made their muscles recover and heal just as fast as young rodents. That's when I became interested, because I'm an old rodent. And so I was like, okay, I can recover faster. This is good. But now there's a lot of good research showing oxytocin increases certain microbes in the gut, like L-reuteri, which is associated with better aging and so on. And we also know, at least in my opinion, the number one job of every species is to reproduce. And after that, you can do what you want to do. And oxytocin is the reward for reproducing. So you have orgasms, you produce oxytocin, the body goes, hey, we're winning, we're doing what we're here to do. The more sex you have, the more orgasms you have, the more oxytocin. And we know that people who have more sex, they age better. We already know this. And so I've all had the 23andMe, and I'm still trying to pull up his thing, but I can paraphrase. Ivo had the 23andMe, and it showed that he had some sort of mutation in the oxytocin receptor that may make him more apathetic. And in fact, he does recognize this. Okay.
Yeah. Oxytocin expresses dopamine receptors.
Yes. And so he said when he trains regularly, he falls in love. He's more emotional, and then he attributes that to being overtrained. So then he takes off for a couple months from his training, and he becomes more apathetic. And my opinion was, it's because your training is actually increasing oxytocin production, and you have more of ability to connect to people. What do you think about that?
You know, it's possible that either training is upregulating oxytocin production, or it's upregulating dopamine receptor sensitivity on the oxytocin. I would suspect it's the latter, in that, you know, training might not increase, for example, insulin receptor density, but it might increase insulin receptor sensitivity.
Right.
You know, if it works similarly, that would be the case. You're more responsive to the interaction of dopamine on the oxytocin receptor, or on oxytocin, rather than you necessarily producing more oxytocin. That's what I would suspect. Although, you know, I'm not 100% sure on that. It's an interesting question, but ultimately in a dopamine deficient society, right, that relies upon video games and, you know, touching the little red, you know, notification buttons all over all the little apps on the phone, you know, that's how we get our dopamine right. rush versus things like exercise and sex. You know, I think that activities like exercise and sex, you know, I'm preaching to the choir, are of course fantastic for upregulating dopamine. And I would suspect that that's probably what's happening is increased dopamine sensitivity in the presence of training.
Okay, excellent. So where can people get the book, Ben? Where should they go to get the book?
You know, you can get it on Amazon. The other thing that I did, because a lot of people like to listen when they train, I know, I recorded the whole thing, the whole book start to finish. And that really sucked, I can tell you that.
yeah.
But it's on Audible too.
Oh, I'm going to download it. That's fantastic. Holy crap. How long of an audio commitment is it on Audible? Holy crap.
It's pretty long. Yeah. I want to say like 18 hours or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, as you probably do, you can listen at one or, you know, two times speed or three times speed and kind of get through it and learn faster if you want.
But I don't do that because I use a little MP3 player. Because what I've found is that if I take my phone with me when I'm training, it distracts me. The same as the research studies that have shown if you place your phone on the table when you're having a conversation, even if it's off, its mere presence distracts you. So when I train, I have this crappy little MP3 player that doesn't even allow me to speed anything up. It's like an old school iPod,
right.
Second generation shuffle. So no, I don't speed things up on the phone, but that's wise because I don't use my phone to listen to stuff usually.
That's brilliant. Now I happen to know, so next week is the Human Potential Summit and you were invited to it, but you're actually going to Hawaii to go bow hunting, right?
Yeah, I was at Mark Bell and Ron Penna and I were having dinner the other night down in Sacramento and Ron reminded me about that Human Performance Summit. You know, he's a brilliant guy and I'm remiss not to go, but yeah, I'm going to be down filling the freezer with goat and sheep and turkey and do some spearfishing down there. So yeah, I can't pass up a bow hunting trip in Hawaii.
So recurve or compound?
Oh, compound. Yeah. Yeah, I like compound, frankly, because I like to hunt big animal. And even down there in Hawaii, there's a lot of wild cattle that eats a lot of wild plants. They're called scrub cattle. And I'll probably get one of those and get a pretty decent amount of meat from that. So yeah, I like the compound.
Yeah, no, I know. So I would imagine you're a better hunter because of your human performance attributes that you've honed and developed over the years, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I was just training yesterday. You know, like a typical workout for me. I've got a 60-pound sandbag, and you know, I'll do box step ups, then turn, sprint, come back, shoot, and then do like a sandbag, get up, turn around, sprint, come back, shoot, because I actually compete in these competitions called train to hunt. It's like obstacle course racing with a bow. And the purpose of those is not to necessarily like win the competition, it's to make you a better hunter.
Yeah.
Right? Because when you're really high and you're sympathetically driven, it's a lot harder to pull the trigger accurately. So yeah, being fit definitely makes you a better hunter unless you're one of these you know, this is more popular back east than it is out west, but unless you're one of these tree stand hunters who hunts over a feeder.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot of guys who do that in New York, actually. That's very common there. One other question I want to ask you. In the 11 ways to know that your body has recovered, you don't include libido as an indicator of overtraining. Why is that?
You know, I probably could have included that. I probably should have included, you know, the whole your morning boner or am I having my period regularly or
yes.
any other element of fertility as a marker.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I listed those 11 markers was because at the time I was using, and I think I listed in the book, this app that I really like called Restwise mm-hmm. that just has a running algorithm of everything from urine color to appetite to profile of mood score. And they should have added a 12th variable to that algorithm that said, did I pitch a tent this morning?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. No, that would be a really good one. Listen, Ben, I'm sorry that we got our wires crossed, but I'm glad that you made it. I'm telling everybody out there, this is an amazing book. This really is the Human Performance Bible. And that's really what it should have been called. It's got so much great information in it. There's page after page. Read it slowly. I dog ear it. Pick it up at a different point and just start reading it, you know, a couple pages here or there. And then apply it. There are so many actionable steps in this book that if you only use 3% of it, you will be better at whatever it is that you are trying to get better at. It's a fantastic book. I got to commend you.
Hey, thanks, man. And I apologize if I was distracted, but my wife's back there cooking an amazing roast, and I've got this wafting into my nostrils. So.
Yes, thanks, Ben. Thanks for making us all jealous. We're all jealous now, Ben. Okay?
Yes.
Well, listen, have a fantastic hunting trip, okay?
All right, I will. Thanks, Carl.
Take care, brother.
Later, dude.
All right, so he did make it. It's a great book. I hope more of you pick up the book. I love it. I love it. And I keep it next to my bed. There's two books that stay next to my bed all the time. The Five Works of Dashiell Hammett, which I can pick up and read over and over again. They're like an old friend. And I'm keeping this book next to my bed now as well, because if I feel like I want to pick up a tidbit that's going to help me the next day in training, I'll pick it up and read it. That's it. That is Come At Me, Bro. Hope we developed some good information. Ivo Su, I guess you're right. It is the dopamine relationship. And I think you should keep training. Stay more empathetic. And fall in love more often. And train. That's it. All right, look, we will see you Monday. And we have a great show planned Monday. I don't know what it is. I can't think of it right now. But we have a great show planned Monday. Hope you can make it live. Of course, as always, the podcast. Check us out on iTunes, on Stitcher, and, of course, iHeartMedia. If you have the iHeartMedia app that you like to listen to your favorite radio shows on, our podcast is there, too, so you can hook us up there. And don't forget, let's help thwart these IRS scammers. Post their numbers on Facebook. Ask your friends to prank call them. Stay on the phone with them till they get to the end of their pitch. It's about 5 minutes. And then, and only then, do you say, F you, I know you're not the IRS. And then call back again. Do that 3 or 4 times. If everybody does that, we will help shut them down. We don't need the FBI to do it. All right, so that's it. We'll see everybody Monday. Thank you for watching. Yeah.